everyone. Welcome to Yachting International Radio on the Wellbeing Project. You're with Corinne Rayson from The Crew Coach, your host. Today I have Kurt Snyder with us, and we're going to talk about elements of leadership within organizations. And some of the hot topics we will be addressing is empathy, empowerment, trust, and communication. I'm going to hand it over to you, Kurt, to give us a bit of a background of who you are and what you do.
No problem at all. Thanks so much, Corinne. Hello, everybody. My name is Kurt Snyder. I live in the United States, a little bit outside of Washington, D.C. I have an extensive maritime background, attending the United States Merchant Marine Academy, being a licensed commercial officer on merchant vessels within the United States. I've also been dually trained and spent 11 years within the defense industry as a United States naval officer. And working with those two organizations, working with people around the world, I've seen and have been mentored by some of the best from different nationalities to different currencies. It doesn't matter. And what I want to do is pass on those best practices, but most importantly, pass on things which have worked time and time again, regardless of time zone or country, but also to give you areas where I have failed and what I've learned from those failures. And so I can pass on to you, and hopefully those failures are not repeated. And I'm very excited to be here and help all of you as best I can.
Thank you so much, Kurt. And this is a topic that I am incredibly passionate about. And one of my values is fairness. So when I hear of harassment, bullying, injustice in the workplace, it really upsets me. And I think a lot of it, the learning comes through being self-aware. So not only aware of your behavior, but aware of the dynamics of a team and how we work together. Because I think that we can get into high water or hot water, whatever you'd like to call it, if we're not aware of how our behavior impacts other people. And this is where feedback comes in, is so important. And I was having a conversation with someone the other day, and they had worked in the industry for 10 years. And she said, I think I may have got feedback once in 10 years. And I found that quite shocking.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And what I can do is I can touch on the empathy piece.
Yes.
The feedback loop, which goes into the communication piece. And then we're going to get to the respect piece and the trust, as well as empowerment. But I important in everything we do. And it is the biggest, it is the most overlooked topic, yet it is also the most dynamic topic can make a difference. For instance, perpetual feedback is extremely important because it provides transparency. And when I would manage a variety of people, I would give them feedback within 90 days or as required, and then again in 180 days, and then a 1 year point. And then from that point, it would be semi-annually, every 6 months. And what happens is when you communicate with somebody constantly, you start to develop the respect, and then the respect forms into trust, and then the trust forms into loyalty. And with loyalty, no matter the organization, the retention is better, the esprit de corps of an organization is better, and it is just a better way to do business. But the perpetual transparency of communication is second to none. And even I've seen expert communicators who have worked around easily people with advanced degrees, extreme professional knowledge, qualifications, or what have you. But I've seen junior personnel who really can connect with people, and they have done a much better job of getting their organization into a better place faster.
Yeah, absolutely. And that really is the foundation of building a healthy culture.
Yes, it is. And you're absolutely right. The healthy culture really originates every day. Every day is a new day, but every day is a chance to further the positive developments, or it's a chance to unfortunately go backwards. And from what I've seen is the best way to communicate is no surprises. If there's information, pass it on as much as you can.
Yes, and it's interesting. This is something that I hear often in our industry with crew who are not in the know of what the movements are with regards to women. I know sometimes it is very last minute, but that is a form of bullying when you intentionally retain information and not share it.
Yes. So that's a big fallacy that I've seen working within the United States and with NATO navies and even corporations overseas as well, is that the companies that do the best to keep employees or stakeholders or the board of directors informed are going to do the best, because that transparency, again, it really solidifies that bridge of trust. And they know that, well, if we haven't heard anything, it might be rumors, because we're always the first to know. We don't hear about it from a third or fourth source, but we really get it all the time. And one example I'll give you, aside from being on ships of different sizes around the world, when you unveil what you are going to do, so again, no surprises. So when I was previously a competitive rower in college, when I would coach competitive rowers here in the DC area, I would tell them right up front, like, this practice is going to be really hard. I'm going to work you really hard, and we're going to work on these three things, but I'm going to give you time to relax. We're going to take water breaks and we'll mess around. But then we'll get back down to business. And so I tell them that to let them know they don't know what to expect, but to let them know that what I intend to do, but why I'm doing it to better them. And if any time there's something that's not going right, we can stop and reset. But it's the same way for an organization as well. As long as you keep people involved and informed, that is the best policy, without a doubt.
Excellent. Sorry for the background noise. I do have someone working in the garden. So I'm going to ask you another question. I'm going to put myself on mute. I'm interested to know a little bit more about narcissists, because this is something that is also, I hear from my clients, very common. How can you recognize a narcissist, and how do you deal with a narcissist?
That is a great question, because I actually have those in my notes to talk about, but we'll talk about it right now. So from what I've found is a narcissist, there's different levels of narcissism, and some are more passive than others, and some are just outright aggressive, assertive, and they make no qualms about making their agenda known. The ones who are passive usually will go with the flow, or they'll go with the group of people who seems to be doing things the right way. But if it appears one group is faltering, they're the first to raise their hands or say, I try to get my ideas across, nobody listened, and they'll try to jump over to the other side, whatever discussion that may be. Another identifier for a narcissist is they're always the first to cast blame, and they'll only accept things that are positive. But if something's negative, they're expert manipulators at trying to put off the shortcomings on somebody else. And that's the ones we deal with the most. But the most dangerous narcissist, actually, they call mocks or Machiavellian type personality. And these are the ones who are the internal saboteurs. And they will smile, they'll talk to you like you're their best friend. But if you leave the room or you leave their presence, they'll be the first ones to talk bad about anybody. And they're really hard to root out. And sometimes they're in very senior positions in the company. But usually they're in the middle to upper middle group, as they're trying to make a name for themselves. But the Machiavellian type personalities, those are the most dangerous, because they're really hard to root out. And it might take anywhere from 1 to 9 months to really figure out what their agenda is, depending on how they're conducting themselves. But the best way with narcissists that I found is, it's funny, right here in my notes, I have tough/difficult individuals. And what I've done to work with these individuals the most, and I've worked with maybe 10 or 12 over my career, and I have one standard phrase. I walk up to them and I say, listen, I know things have not gone well between us or between our project teams or programs or departments, but how can I help? Let's just move on this together. And usually the majority of them will say, oh, well, if you could do this and that, we can work forward. And so that's a way you can really help bring the olive branch and the dove to bear, to help try to lower their guard and say, and one thing that I have found is if I ask them how I can help and they tell me, I'll do everything possible to help them in those areas as fast as I can. And what I do is I never go back to ask them for a favor just because I don't want them to see, I did it for you, now you do it for me.
Yeah.
And most of them will, after things have settled down, they will return to me in some shape or form and say, I really appreciate it. Is there anything that you need from me? And then I'll take that as my opportunity to say, well, actually, yes. And I try to focus on one or two items only. And so I don't want to leverage the relationship that I'm trying, whatever, if I do three favors for you, I want three favors back. I'm trying to really get a proponent of teamwork and just kind of an integrated leadership that we can work together. And again, most of those 80-85% of the time that will diffuse a narcissist, but there are some that just, they're very difficult to work with. And you just have to, depending on the situation, you have to approach it from different angles.
Yeah, it is fascinating. I would love to know from, say if there's a captain mm-hmm. who's a narcissist and you've got to learn how to work. I just find them, they're so bully-like. Just thinking of a real life example where there was a yacht with 25 crew. At the moment, there's only 3 left because of this captain. And he will blatantly, verbally assault and put you down so that you feel worthless. How do you recommend using the same approach that you've just mentioned in dealing with someone like that?
Sure. So the one area I just mentioned would be more at a colleague or peer level or the next step below. If it's a time where if I was a direct report to somebody, an executive director or a master or a ship's captain, in that case, I would still approach them. And it's a very tenuous situation because you want to try to diffuse it, but yet most of these individuals, they still want the rank, privilege, and greetings and salutations. So I'm very careful to address them as ma'am or sir or captain or whatever their title is. And I just try to, I might try a very soft touches on different areas and I see which one might be responsive. And maybe I'll go back the next day and I'll kind of maybe gravitate toward that direction a little more. And usually everybody has a soft spot, even the hardline narcissists. It just might take a little feeling around to get it. But if you, as long as you're demonstrating respect and all the proper salutations and greetings that they entitle and they're entitled to in their position, that usually starts off every conversation positive. And we can just go from there. But it's, there's a variety of ways you can approach that. But I always, what I tell individuals or organizations, it's always best to take the high road and never be, no matter what they may say, you have to mentally prepare yourself for there might be backlash, there might be harsh or criticizing statements, and you're more ready to handle those because you're expecting those. You're expecting those big fireballs coming at you. And yeah. I think if you're expecting them, it's easier to say, oh, in your mind, you're like, oh, no, there's one right there. And you just sort of mentally dodge it. And if they try and take the conversation negative, you can just try and take it positive in another direction. Like I said, there's like a spectrum of narcissists, and yeah. Only usually the more severe narcissist are the ones that might take a little bit more effort. But usually if it's a genuine ability to work through something and to show them respect, that usually starts to break down those walls the best way and the fastest.
Yeah. And I think with narcissists, they respond well to flattery as well. Yes. As with regards to, they want to still be put on that pedestal. So anything that would shake that pedestal gets mm-hmm. them irked up. So yeah, I think it's about not provoking the lion within. So being very sensitive around, as you said, how to address them. And also maybe keeping your head down and just getting on with it.
It is. And there's a little trick that I've learned from a few psychologists. And what that is, there's something called pattern interruption technique. And what that is, if you sense somebody is going down a very negative path, before meeting with those individuals, you would find some recent accomplishment or, you know, maybe on the yacht or the ship, something where the repairs were affected sooner than expected, maybe say engineering. And if they start going down that wrong path and there's even the slightest pause, I'll use that to say, oh, ma'am, I can't remember if I forgot to tell you, but those repairs to number two engine, those are complete and we're ready to do operational tests. And I think we'll be fine. And what that does is it forces them to stop on their path. They have to redivert their brain to accept what you just offered, which is a fact. You're reminding them of something positive around them. And usually once you do that, they have to process. It might be a 4 to 5 second cycle or maybe longer, but they really have a hard time jumping back on that negative track because that window is now closed. And right there, the most recent thought they just had was something positive that you just delivered to them. That has worked a lot. It's extremely successful technique. And again, if you're trying to work with somebody and they're moving very slowly, but you see them start going the wrong way and going negative in a conversation. But yeah, the pattern interruption technique is just a way to insert positive facts into their thinking. So they stop thinking so negative all the time and they start to go positive.
It's almost like a diffusions technique.
It's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Exactly. You're trying to neutralize the negative laser as best you can. And it works. I've used it many times. It works. It's the best way I can sum that up.
Yeah. And the other techniques that are similar is disassociation and unhooking.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, exactly. And there's a couple different techniques and procedures you can do that. But we're trying to really just reset a person's mindset and to get them more positive, focus on the positive and not going so negative and only wanting to dwell on those low frequency, negative, gloomy thoughts, which, and there's a very talented researcher. He's in the United States and it proof why you should never think about a bad event over and over. Because when you do that, the whole body releases the same chemicals. The brain doesn't know it's real or imagined. And even though you're thinking about, say, a car accident, the body will secrete the same chemicals. And basically, you're really reliving that event. Even though I'm just thinking about it, you're not. There's all kinds of things in the endocrine system are going on. And it just really, you just brought that to life again. And the more you do that, actually, it's more powerful. And those roots go deeper into a person. And it's harder to let go of.
Yeah,
maybe a lack of a promotion or somebody losing their position through a termination. So that's why I was trying to keep people up on a higher frequency or higher mindset and if you don't think about those bad thoughts, they will just go away because you're thinking about now of the positive ones.
Yes. Oh, it's so fascinating and so exciting that you can switch the flick and you do have control issues. Yes. And going back to self-awareness and realizing or being aware of the thoughts that are happening and then pausing and going, okay, how can I reframe this?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly. You're 100% correct.
So with your experience, you would have worked with many nationalities and different cultures. How does a leader manage that?
The first way that I have experienced is that regardless of the culture, nationality, or geographic location, people are people. And even when I don't speak Japanese and I don't speak Italian, when I've worked with individuals in those countries, you can almost just intuitively spot out the people you can trust, the people who are genuine, and then the people who have doubts, and then the people who they're just like, why is this person here? I don't know why we've never worked with this team before. So you, depending on the culture, there's obviously cultural norms you have to respect. Greetings or even the littlest things where somebody might be living in Spain, but they might offend somebody living in the United Arab Emirates if they say the wrong thing. Or even if they sit with their shoes wrong and they show the sole of their shoe in that part of the country, it's an insult. And they just might be shifting their posture in a chair, but right now, right off the bat, they're negative. So it's really good to be aware of the what is accepted and not accepted, mm-hmm. and the best way to proceed. But if in doubt, something I've always done, if I'm not too sure or I didn't get a full enough briefing on everything to consider, I just try to be as kind, polite, quiet, and forthright as possible. And usually that will go far. And depends how long you work with different nationalities or teams. Once they get to know you, you get to know them. That does, you start to build that respect and that trust and so forth. You can build that up.
And it's the same. It's the basic foundations of counseling 101, the things that you mentioned there with empathy and mm-hmm. being non-judgmental and mm-hmm. self-awareness, all that emotional intelligence that is really key in building a harmonious workplace.
Absolutely. The EQ, emotional, you know, intelligence goes to transcends the IQ. I've seen people with they're very intelligent books and math and physics and engineering, but they just don't know really how to work with people. And they get very frustrated because they think a person is a mathematical problem or it's an equation. If I do this, it must give me the answer. And that's not the way to do things. So it's very beneficial to understand more of that personal relationship and building and what I call shared leadership. And you don't have to remind anybody of your title, position, or what you do. The only thing you have to do is really make sure you empower and support others and show that I'm here to be a part of this team, part of this crew, part of this program, whatever it is, and just say, how can I help? What can I do? And that has gone just light years of success for me.
Yes. Okay, so when you were working in the Navy, I'm just interested to know mm-hmm. the percentage of male and female on board.
So on an average U.S. Navy ship, there's probably maybe 20 to 25% female uh-huh. now, currently.
Yeah.
And what those numbers look like, they might be, say, on an average size warship, that might be 260 males and roughly 60 or to 70 females. Mm. So the females do have their own berthing and own compartments and so forth, and even staterooms at the officer level. But it has there are still, unfortunately, stigmas and around, and some of them are very hard to uproot. For me, it wasn't a problem. My wife was also a U.S. Navy officer, and I got to know, obviously, her and many of her friends, and some very, very talented, and some of those friends are astronauts now. They're running in government for the United States. They're very, very talented, and I've, years ago, like 25, 26 years ago, I learned to appreciate a person for who they are and what they can do, mm-hmm. and just what diversity they bring to the table. And unfortunately, a lot of people still can't do that yet. And it will get rooted out of society eventually, but yeah. There are still strongholds of that existing.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's nothing better than having to deal with resistance to change. My goodness, it's challenging, but I certainly love it. I love the people that are defiant and challenging. I love working right. with them. But with regards to mental health, in those situations, how you observed men mm-hmm. versus female and how they deal with their mental health, and what is the culture like in the maritime industry when dealing with mental health issues? Is it the unspoken?
It is the unspoken. And I would say one word would summarize it, and it's fear. Fear of being seen as not competent. Fear of losing a position, being replaced if they speak out about a mental illness, fear of seeing as this person has reached their plateau and now others will be promoted ahead of them. And so I would say fear dominates the landscape, and a lot of people are concerned about how they are perceived by others. Mm-hmm. from the whole, all around the crew, from the most, from the captain of the vessel all the way down to the most entry-level position. They're seeing, they're fearful of how their colleagues will evaluate them, judge them, treat them. And I think it's really just, it deserves more attention in a positive light, because unfortunately it's just not mental health at work or on the clock. It could also be taking care of a family member at home. And there's just different levels of mental illness that people need to appreciate, and don't judge a person because they might be dealing with a lot more stress before they come to work each day. And they're starting off their day negative, and they're looking for anything positive. And I guess I'll go into this, where, what have I done? For an example, when I was in the Navy, one of the gentlemen who worked for me had a son, had some ear problems from birth, required constant surgeries, constant appointments. And this young man was excellent at what he did. He was truly an expert. And so many times he felt bad coming to me asking for a day off. And his name is Jason. I said, Jason, like, first priority is your family. So you take off 1 or 2 days, whatever you need, just give me an update if you're not going to be back in 2 days, and I'll take care of everything else. I'll cover everything else. He might be gone a day or a day and a half, but when Jason did return, he was like, wow, like, I was supported by my chain of command, we'll call it. And he only amplified his performance, because that's the way he was grateful to show that we supported his personal life as well. And of course, that's weighing on your mind if you have a sick child in the hospitals nonstop. So it worked out very well. And that has been through countless other individuals, where if you give an ounce of respect, you will get a pound of performance back. And that ties into the empathy and empowerment of others. And that goes into shared leadership, where when Jason came back, actually, I had to report very high up to my hierarchy. And Jason came up with a great idea. And I was like, I never thought of that. So went really high up the U.S. Navy. And they're like, well, oh my gosh, this is fantastic. And they say, congratulations, Kurt. I said, well, that's not my idea. That's Jason's. So Jason got an award, and that only amplified his performance even further.
Yeah.
So my belief is, again, when I mentioned you don't have to tell people your title, your position, what you do, I just go by Kurt, no matter if I was in the Navy or not. If I had to, obviously the rank structure, but I'm like, on my birth certificate, my name's Kurt. That's who I prefer. Kurt, that's great. Okay. But it's just a better way to do things. And when you share that leadership, where I think we could do these two things, and then I'll go to direct reports or people around me and say, well, but what are you seeing? What do you think? Because you're working with this group every day. I'm not. I only see these two groups over here. So when you give people the ability to buy in, and again, this goes into communication, to have their voice heard. And I will say that individuals who can't have their voice heard, that's what creates dissension, anxiety, mistrust, and so forth, because they don't feel valued by the organization. And even if their idea is not working, you can say, well, that's actually really good. I like how you came up with that idea, but it's maybe not what we're looking for now. However, feel free. I have an open door policy to always approach me with anything you want to talk about. And when that happens, now you break down those walls. You tell people that I'm open to talk about anything. I value your input. I value you as a person. And that's only going to just reinforce any organization, any vessel, any ship, any yacht, any submarine, any corporation, whatever it is. These strategies work everywhere. They're just not, they don't work in Canada or New Zealand or Spain. They work everywhere. And that's really what, one of my prime mentors who mentored me 25 years ago, I still keep in touch with him. He lives in France. He was a French special operations commando. And through the military, I got to do an exchange with him. And he really laid the foundation for everything that I have used and have learned from. His name's Raphael. And he is a fantastic human. And you can learn from anybody on any continent at any time. Now, always be an open learner. constant learner and treat others with respect. And that right there will get you, will help succeed in any organization.
Yeah, 100%. And this is something that we do need to be mindful of. Going back what I said initially, being self-aware of our behavior and the use of power by dictating to people what they should be doing rather than having an open door policy, what you will notice is presenteeism. And I'm sure you know what presenteeism is, and that's about you're present at work, but your mind is absent. You don't really want to be there. You're not engaged. There's no employee satisfaction. There's low productivity, low morale, and it's not serving anyone.
It's not. And I can tell you another quick story. One of my last Navy assignments in Virginia on the East Coast of the United States, very large naval base. They had two brand new ships they built. They were right beside each other on the pier. But they were two totally different ships. One ship had a commanding officer or a captain that was, he was a extreme narcissist. He treated everybody like the bottom of his shoe. He would not support anybody. He would not do anything. He only looked to stood on the shoulders of others to further his career. And you had about 330 people that just despised coming to work every day, because I knew somebody on that ship. The other ship I also knew somebody on was the complete opposite. It was a servant leader who did everything for to help others. This individual would stay late. He would do letters of recommendation to help their career. He would make phone calls with his, he used his power for good, and he would try to further their careers. And that first warship, the bad one, people, when they finished their initial contract with the Navy, they were leaving. They couldn't count them fast enough how fast they were leaving. The other warship with the servant leader had record numbers of retention that the Navy ever saw. So it's just, and that fascinated me when I went back to university to study an advanced degree. Unlike my background of math and science and physics and all that stuff that I really don't use that much anymore, I really wanted to learn about organizational leadership and the psychology of, I have the real world experience, but why do smart people do dumb things? Why do capable people consistently make wrong decisions? And so that, just those one person on everyone, you have 330 people going to work happy every day and leaving happy, and 330 people were counting their days till they left that ship. And just one person, how the power of one person can trickle everything down.
Yes, a very powerful example. I'm curious to know, in our industry, only advanced leadership is coming to the forefront. And I hear from some captains, there's that idea of, but I'm a leader, I've got the stripes. I don't need to do a leadership course. Why would I need to do a leadership course? Your experience around professional development and the leadership training that you got compared to what we have in all the culture around it in our industry. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Sure. Sure. Leadership's a very interesting topic and title. Really everybody is a supervisor or manager, and their crew, their team, their company, whatever, they are chosen as a leader. They are chosen as the default person through trust, belief, loyalty, and things like that. And I see in the Navy, it's really hard, because through that hierarchical organization, like, oh, they're the ones in charge, so they're a leader. Well, not really, but they're, and I really think it's how the person is, how they conduct their own business. So I've seen many times, again, of people who have great resumes, great backgrounds, but they don't really demonstrate that in person. And you've seen other people that look, well, they look okay, but they get to the ship or the crew and they're fantastic. They are a gem. People instantly gravitate toward them. But yes, and so it's, my wife, she will also say, well, she works in a government organization, and she'll say, well, they're a bad leader. Like, no, they're a leader or they're not. It's sort of like an Olympian at the Olympics. I've never heard anybody say, that's a really horrible Olympian, right? It's like an Olympian is it's a very elite designation. And I'd say leadership or a leader is as well. But it's very hard because even in my country, I've seen companies, you know, our new director of something, and they'll address them as the senior leader. And they're really some, you know, either through political connections or maybe just by virtue of their constant promotions. Some people aren't, just because somebody's senior does not mean they are a leader. I think it's the moral weave of their character and their, it's kind of in their DNA. But the good news is everybody can become a leader. And what happens, the only thing that there's two words that I was going to talk about. There's, as I call, the bright side of the moon, and there's dark side of the moon. So the bright side of the moon is empathy. That's where we all want to be. How can we help others, put ourselves in their situation? How can we advance, better them? How can we better be a better human ourselves and just contribute to the good of everyone? The dark side of the moon is ego. Ego is what gets people into trouble. Ego leads to narcissism. Ego leads to unscrupulous conduct, being unfair, special rules for special people. And that just goes down a very dark hole that it's very hard to climb out of again. So I don't know if I'm really answered your question, but an individual can really set the tone by being a present, focused individual who really wants to help others, help the organization, help the crew, help the vessel, help the company. Yeah. That's the best way to be designated as a leader. So basically a leader is chosen by those around them.
Yeah.
And a manager is just, or a supervisor is on paper. We're all manager supervisors, but the ones who act better toward developing others, they are chosen as a leader.
Absolutely. So with your training, was it mandatory to do leadership training?
It was not too much of it, quite frankly. And my leadership, playing athletics at a young age and going through a military academy. I had failures along the way. I had successes, but I had failures. You learn from those. And even into my entry level time as an officer, I had a pretty good handle on things. And I was getting mentored, a little bit of leadership. I learned the most from leadership practical experience from others. When I would make a mistake, I remember I was working for a shipping company, and I made a mistake on something on the stowage plan. And the captain pulled me aside and said, "Okay, I'm not upset, but what did you learn?" And I said, "Well, here's what I learned." And he said, "Well, what are you going to do to prevent that in the future?" "I'm going to do these two things." He's like, "That's a great job." He's like, "Okay." He's like, "Well, have a good day." And so when you do that, and when you make it, again, a hospitable environment where it's okay to make mistakes. Now, if somebody keeps making the same mistake 5, 6, 7 times over, we'll have to address that in a different way. But usually when somebody makes a mistake and it's like, we're supportive, you know, we can fix this, no big deal. We can correct it right now. That's the best way to really, I believe, to advance. And that's what I've learned, again, from some of my mentors. And that master, that ship's captain on a merchant ship, he's also my second mentor. So you know, I have an American and I have a gentleman from France, and they're my two main mentors.
Yes, yes, wow. And I'm sure you would agree, learning is a lifelong journey, and leadership, I think, falls into that same category. And a piece of feedback that I received, I think, from a captain, he was looking to put a chief stew on my leadership course, and I said it was 3 months long. He's like, "What? 3 months for a course?" And I'm like, it's really about 4 months long. But leadership is just an ongoing process and journey. And I've reviewed a plethora of leadership training, and there's nothing worse than just information download and text. And yes, I think the core ingredient of successful learning is learning the copy or the theory behind it, but then going and applying that learning and then reflecting and processing exactly what that mentor was trying to do with you is going, okay, so let's look at the application of skill. What worked, what didn't work, and what did we learn from that so we can move forward as a leader?
Absolutely. You're 100% right on target with that. That is as you said, learning or leadership is a lifelong journey. I've been doing it for over 25 years, and I still have so much more to learn. And there's still going to be people out there that can teach me so much. But what I try and do is I try to leave a better world in my wake. And I try to say, don't do that. I made that mistake. Why don't you do one of these two items instead? And not to be pushy or intrusive, but just to say, you know, you shouldn't have to learn. Like this mistake shouldn't have to repeat down the line over and over. So if I can help somebody or give them some guidance or just some useful information that I've learned over the years, then I try and do that. But no, absolutely. Learning is a lifelong journey. And I think it was Plato that said, true knowledge is knowing that you know nothing.
Yes. Yes.
So
yes,
and like, that's why he was a great mind, because it's just, there's so much out there to learn, and we can just try and learn as much as we can in our areas of focus. But yes, it's just you're always learning, reflecting, improving, and looking how you can distill that information to others as well.
Yes. Kurt, I would love to know, do you have a favorite leadership book?
I do. There's been, actually, I think I have one on my desk here. There's a book called Overcome, and it was written by a former Navy SEAL on various combat missions where he failed, and the failure, how it hurt others, but how they'd even think he was going to live from his injuries. And he first had to get through his injuries, had to come to peace with himself for the mistakes he made and how it affected others. And now he is a prominent speaker in the United States. And he goes around talking about, it's one thing to mess up on a booking agent or maybe a pier side time or getting the tugs alongside. But whenever you're in a battlefield situation, it's there's much more great things that sometimes can't be undone. And that's a great book. I think another person in general is Simon Sinek.
Yes.
And he is based in New York City. I think he has some really sage advice too. Yes. So he has a podcast, and he, like I said, he has written a few good books. I listen to his podcast, his videos. I haven't read his books. I'm more intrigued with how he delivers his information.
Yes.
And sometimes I would watch Simon and say, I never thought to do that before. I got to write that down. And he'll say something else and say, oh, I started doing that 10 years ago. I couldn't agree more. And, but like I said, it's just, you just try to really go out there and look at different individuals and just see what they, you know, what they have to say and things they've learned along the way. And I think once the group of humanity as a whole start putting all their positive attributes together, I think everywhere is going to be a much better place. But I think the fear drives the narcissism. Narcissism drives the ego. We got to take the fear out to say it's okay to fail, and it's okay to show people your vulnerabilities. But on that side, as I try to develop myself even further, I try to help others however I can along the way.
Beautiful. What a lovely way to end off. Kurt,
sure.
I'm so excited for you to come into the TCC membership so that we can draw more from your not only knowledge, but your experience. I think experience is so powerful. And for the listeners on Yachting International Radio, how can they find you or hear more of you?
Sure. So a good source, probably one of the best sources right now, is through the website LinkedIn.
Okay.
And so my company is called Achieve Leadership. Mm-hmm. And there are a few Kurt Snyders. So if you put in Kurt Snyder, Achieve Leadership, I'm updating my profile page now. But the other is my website's under development. Mel is active. And it is just hello@achleadership.com.
Perfect. Right. Well, I've seen you. I've just searched you on LinkedIn. I can see you there. Wonderful. Yes. Thank you so much, Kurt, for your time. Really appreciate it.
No, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
The fact that you're still here listening to this interview tells me that you probably got a lot of learnings and takeaways from tuning in. If you are interested in expanding your leadership skills and leaving your legacy within the industry, then join my waitlist. The doors of my leadership course will be opening soon. Or head over to Instagram where you can send me a DM as well as access a range of leadership resources for this month. Okay, everyone. Hopefully I will see you at the same time, same place.